are you doing? we're talking about, my name is Andrea Bauer, and I would love to talk with you about the crypto economy or what happens beyond the Bitcoin, or especially about after the Bitcoin crash, so to say. And most of you probably remember that by the beginning of this year, the Bitcoin crashed by 50% after the price reached its all-time high in by the end of December, almost $20,000. And then within 2 or 3 weeks, it fell by 50%. And with this, actually, a huge discussion started around Bitcoin. Is it a scam? Is it the gold of the digital age? Is it, what is cryptocurrency, actually? And what is all this discussion around decentralized and centralized systems now? And I would love to look a little bit what actually happened in the last months and give you a little bit a meta outlook, what I think will come, or how this crypto economy evolves and will look like a little bit. And the topics that kind of popped up was or were very hard discussed was ICOs, blockchain, kind of reached another level of popularity, and distributed ledger technology. Not a new term, but actually experiencing a completely new revival with this whole discussion. So quickly, what is an ICO? Probably most of you heard this term already, but just to describe it again, it is an initial coin offering. And it is, in the end, a new format to fund startups in the crypto, in the blockchain world. And why did it become so popular? Since its beginning, or since its existence, projects and startups get funded in a ridiculously high amount of money. And so just to give you a little bit of an... some even say that the VC model is kind of corrupted with this kind of new format. And just to give you an idea on numbers, just the last 15 months, for instance, crypto startups or blockchain startups got funded by VCs by roughly $1.3 billion. And compared to this, ICOs raised through ICOs got raised like $4.5 billion. So more than, or around like four times more than usual funding. And with this, it became super popular. But with this also, it also attracted a lot of talent. And a lot of people then thought about how can we actually really apply this blockchain technology. So what is blockchain again? You probably also heard this term many times. And as I said, it is around since a while, but get a next level of popularity. So what is blockchain? Blockchain is, in the end, the backbone of the first cryptocurrency, Bitcoin. And it is a decentralized system, a decentralized ledger technology, a decentralized database. And and in the end, it doesn't need a middleman to kind of create trust in this system. And why is this? Because it's relying on a consensus mechanism, which in the end validates every transaction that is happening in this network. And every time when a new transaction or activity get validated, it get created in a block and get chained by a hashtag to the previous block. And so, voila, we have a blockchain. And to sum it up a little bit in terms of characteristics, so just for you as a reminder, it is a distributed ledger, which is consensus-based, which is transparent. Every one of the users in the network can see it. It is tamper-proof. It hasn't been hacked. The Bitcoin blockchain hasn't been hacked since it's launched in 2009. And it's immutable, because it's very hard to actually delete information, because it's built upon each other. And when you say like Bitcoin, the Bitcoin blockchain was like the first blockchain we were talking about. It's a single-use blockchain, very much focusing on crypto applications or cryptocurrency applications. The Ethereum platform also become very popular, or more popular than ever, especially through ICOs in the last month. Is more a multi-use blockchain. And what does that mean? In the end, the difference with Ethereum is that you can program on the blockchain, and you can create these so-called smart contracts. And with this, it opened up a completely new universe of how blockchain can be applied. And suddenly people thought about, hey, we can apply it for governmental services. We can, the whole legal area can be disrupted. Or media, food, insurance sector, health, supply chain, energy, real estate. And in the last months, especially finance through these ICO, more and more of these applications are popping up. And just to show you three of them, for instance, there is Agora. In the governmental area, you can also apply blockchain, for instance, for voting or to kind of verify votes. And Agora was very much involved, and maybe you followed the news, in the national election in Sierra Leone. In the beginning, they even said that they completely changed to a blockchain-based system, but then they refused and said, actually, we're still on paper, but Agora helped us, and we are kind of opened up our process for them, and now they at least have a proof of concept for that they can record votes on a blockchain. And there is, for instance, another example. This is Steam, or their application is called Steam It. What they want to do is, or what they are offering is, in the end, a platform where you can really create peer-to-peer social networks. So in the end, that a user interacts with the platform and gets token through their interaction, earns actually money, and the advertiser actually pays you or pays them directly for their attention. Or they are civil, especially in a time when we talk about fake news. They want to create a newsroom which is blockchain-based and certify news on their truth in the end, and for journalists and citizens. And all these new solutions are now popping up, and still they're talking about, is it a hype? What is blockchain now? And Gartner already said last year that blockchain already went over the peak of the expectations. And actually now we are more and more going towards the valley of realization. And especially, I think, with all these applications, if it is voting or if it is for real estate or if it is for social media, it is a moment of understanding of what can this technology actually really do. Because in the last month, I think it was more dealt that it is like the magic stick and solves all our problems. And so I would like to look into like three aspects, actually, where I think that they are very important about the emerging crypto economy, which is very much driven by Bitcoin, ICOs, cryptocurrencies, and blockchain in the end, or the characteristics of this technology, to better understand what kind of economy is emerging in front of us. And it is, I want to dive into trust, I want to dive into the token economy and into the consensus mechanism to make it a little bit more clear. So let's talk about trust. Most of you probably heard the term that blockchain is a trustless system. Why did they say that? So first of all, the term is used because there are no middlemen. There's no central institution anymore. We don't need this institution anymore because of this consensus mechanism. But is the trust completely gone? Of course not. Trust is, first of all, the very basic fabric of our social society. Without trust, there is no relationship, no family, no community, no business, no nation state, nothing. But what we see in the last years, or like in history, that the trust term itself emerged over time. Because we also transformed in a sense of how we live together and how we organize ourselves and how we allocate resources and distribute them. And trust, for instance, when you go 1,000 years back, was back then more related between, was describing more the relationship between me and the gods, or you and the gods. And then after a while, and there were also like rituals around it, like prayers, for instance. Then with a growing society, we created kingdoms and bigger organizations. the interpersonal trust became more important. So trust was more related to the interpersonal connection in the end that I have to another person. And also here there were rituals created like shaking hands to make sure that no one has a weapon. The other person is not a weapon. And with bigger organizational structures, like a nation state, banks, international organizations, we more and more dived into institutional trust, and we learned about institutional trust. And Nicholas Luhmann, you most probably know because of he's the founder of the system theory, he calls it the system trust, for instance. And this is fundamentally different than the interpersonal trust, for instance, because it is much more, you can much more stress it, actually. So you are excusing probably your iPhone more flaws than your close friends. And but this institutional trust, for instance, especially when we talk about banks, I think get an enormous crack in 2009. This is when the financial crisis actually happened, and this was actually the starting point of cryptocurrencies, of this whole developer community coming together, developing this incredible infrastructure that we have today, and so actually to try to build this distributed trust. What does that mean? Actually, there's just another form of another level of how trust is now emerging, and it's emerging from an institutional trust into the algorithm in the end of these distributed networks. And we saw this over history, like many times, that our economy actually, represented by how we are designed ledgers and tokens, we created a kind of a completely a trust system around us and how we organize ourselves. And this is when you go like 5,000 years back, you know, when we like started out organizing ourselves in tribes, using like clay or raystone as a ledger, and then went on with kingdoms, with tokens, with in the nation state, with just like usual, like the money that we got to know. And today, like, have plastic cards and like virtual money already. And now we are just about to step maybe into this next format of an economy, a decentralized peer-to-peer network managed one, which is like represented by in tokens, by digital tokens, and where the consensus algorithm is issuing the money and kind of is in the center of running it also, besides a distributed community. And as you probably already can guess that here, that how important actually the design of the token and the design of the consensus mechanism is. So let's look into what is a token. And a token is, of course, much more than a coin in this crypto economy. It is, to describe it a little bit more broader, it is, first of all, a unit of value that is used by an organization to self-govern their business model and to empower their users to interact with each other. And with this, you can already guess there's not just one type of a token. There are many, as we are knowing it like today. So there's the crypto token, like, for instance, a Bitcoin, a Ripple, a Dash, you name it. Then there are, like, equity tokens. Those are more well-known in... this is the ones that you're getting in a pre-sale of an ICO. They're also called the security tokens, and they're very much in the focus of when we talk about the regulation these days. Then there are the utility tokens. This is more about a right of access to, or a right in general, to products, to companies, different things. Or an asset token. This is most of the time related to physical assets, like a car, for instance, or like an apartment. Or there are reward tokens. I was just mentioning Steemit before. So when you're like on a platform and you're interacting with it and get rewarded by it, and then you redeem this tokens that you earned on another in another moment. But every time a new crypto startup or blockchain startup comes up and they want to issue a token, they think about their token economy. In particular, and so because you can mix, of course, all these types again, or come up with completely new ideas, and to just basically think, okay, what is the role of this token in my community, or in, on my platform or on my in my decentralized application, wherever you want to apply it. So what is the role? So it, the role can be, for instance, a right. What is the purpose? So in this community, on this platform in particular, to then define what actually the very concrete features, so what actually can the owner, the holder of the token, can really do with this token, and what does he experience in specific use cases, for instance. So these were the tokens. And at the same time, of course, the consensus mechanism is also a very central element in this crypto economy. And with all these use cases and all these new applications who are coming up, you will find also a very a variety of a new consensus mechanism. And I just chose three of them. And here's the proof of work, the proof of stake, and the proof of importance. And the proof of work actually is known from the Bitcoin. It is the Bitcoin consensus mechanism in the end. So what is happening here? So the miners in the networks, actually they are competing with each other to solve a very highly mathematical problem to actually create the next hash tag for the next block in the chain. The one who wins gets the transaction fee. And as you can imagine, this costs a lot of computing power, and this is actually the whole discussion that we are having regarding sustainability and the consensus mechanism, and also the problem of scalability and performance. So there are enormous limits with the proof of work. But so the proof of stake is actually another format which is a little bit more efficient. And here, actually, the principle is that they assume that a miner in the system who has more stakes has the last will, with the last probability, corrupt the validation process. And with this, he kind of gets the right to validate more. But with this also, you run into the problem that the rich get richer and the poor stay poor. And so we come to the proof of importance, which is a little bit more distributed in this moment. So it also introduces the element of reputation into the consensus mechanism by measuring the importance. And the importance you can measure by different things, by the stakes that a miner has in a network, but also the interactions that they are doing, or the quality and the frequency of interaction they are doing, and there are a lot of new formats also coming up now, and they are actually going completely beyond the blockchain infrastructure, and they say we don't design blocks in chains anymore, and with this we also come up with completely new forms of consensus mechanism, and then you can kind of describe in an overall term called distributed ledger technologies. What is this? It is, in the end, a technology that oversees and maintains transactions and smart contracts in a distributed database. So very broad, and you can already guess, it is actually an overall term for different forms of how you can manage a distributed database or ledger. And blockchain is just one element in this format, and there's also directed acyclic graphs, or short DAGs, where you could put in IOTA, Hashgraph, or Holochain, or Tempo, which is used by Radix. Let's look into the IOTA, Hashgraph, and Holochain quickly. So IOTA is actually very much, and you can already guessing it through the name, very much focusing on the Internet of Things in the end. And they said, okay, we need a high-performing technology. And with this, we kick out the concept of a miner, and we don't have any transaction fees anymore, and create a new kind of a consensus mechanism, which is called the Tangle. And in the end, and this is more checking out, like it's actually more validating in a format of a neighborhood. So not a global consensus, but a more the neighborhood consensus, to breaking it a little bit down. Or Hashgraph, they are came up with a virtual voting system, which is based on the gossip protocol, and the name already says it also. So it's the consensus is kind of created by spreading the word in the network, and through some steps, everyone knows it. And or there is Holochain, for instance, and they are saying, actually, every knot in our system is not synchronized. Every knot in our system has an individual history on its own. But we also have a global memory. And and with this, actually, we are more, they call themselves agent-centric and the data-centric. And every new distributed ledger technology actually seems like it is a new kind of microeconomy in itself. It seems so. And we are like, I think we are right now in a moment where we're kind of creating a multiverse of microeconomies. It seems so. And which comes with some challenges, I would say. And especially when you learned about, okay, there are diversity of consensus mechanism. There's a diversity of how you can design your token, and then there are like different protocols, and everyone is like mixing it together. But then in the end, we should be able to kind of transfer assets through the platform, which is quite a challenge. And I think interoperability is one of the gold standard in this crypto economy right now. There are tons of initiatives for sure right now, but also very spread out. This is just one. It is a nice graphic from Cosmos, how they kind of imagined the internet of blockchains, for instance. Another thing is what you probably also saw in the news, that it very much, we talk about regulation a lot these days, but most of the time, or by the beginning of the year, it was very much about regulating security tokens. But of course, as you see, it's much more than this. And Malta came up now with a first framework of a DLT regulation, but it is, of course, very much, I think it's we should go for an international understanding. And for those of you who had followed the Facebook hearing, I think that it's also very important that this kind of regulation comes out of the community. So I think that self-regulation is more important than ever in a phase like this, with a complex situation of technology like this. Since we have like very basic things that we haven't like answered yet, even in this digital world, what digital identity, for instance, mean? So what is digital privacy in a distributed world? What is digital dignity or self-sovereignty in this distributed world? We haven't an answer yet to this kind of questions. Or what is like this reputation system? Because this reputation system in a distributed network is more important than ever, actually. Because this reputation system will make allow to open a door or not, will give you a job or not, will give you a loan or not. And so it is very important to understand what kind of aspects are recorded in this reputation systems, what is quantifiable even. So there are many questions which are not answered yet, but just to sum it up, I think that there are so the dynamic in the community is enormous, what I see, and so there will more and more like distributed ledger technology solutions will come up in the next month, years, will more mature, And I think that there will be a major, and with this actually we're going to experience a major data sharing paradigm shift in the end. And I think what can be distributed will be distributed, but with all the learnings that we are going to have in this phase of maturity, maturing the technology and the solution for sure, because there is no proof yet. Just to remember, where did we start? 2009, financial crisis. And the whole system now should be built to be fairer, more inclusive, and should be creating more wealth for the maturity. And this proof isn't there yet. So it's just a technology. And there are a lot of terms around that it will be more liberating and more democratic. I think we have to, now is the time to really work on this and to create this dystopia that we were preaching in the beginning. And this is why I want to close with a quote from Yochai Benkler, who said, there are no space for perfect freedom, just different sets of constraints, so let's get them right. Thank you.
We still have time for one of two questions. Are there any questions? Just one question, okay. Anyone? No? Okay. Thank you very much, Andrea, then.
Thank you.